Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, Deezer to go public with 1 billion euro valuation. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Why are you whispering?
Don't know, just thought I'd do it different.
Is it secret that I'm here?
Could be.
Closely guarded secret.
We're going to reveal a secret in a minute.
Hello there.
Hello. As ever, I'm all right.
Good.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when we confirmed a very exciting Great Escape keynote that quite possibly is an exclusive announcement to this podcast.
If you are listening to it as it goes out,
which I'm sure everyone is,
then it's possible that we haven't reported this in the CMU Daily yet. It's not often Setlist gets a scoop on the Daily. There will be there will be arguments going on between the Setlist team and the CMU Daily team.
Yeah. Fist fights, perhaps.
Me and him, basically. But yes, so as you're probably aware, The Great Escape is getting very, 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 very close now. It's just there on the horizon. If you look up, you can see it. It's there. That thing on the horizon, that's The Great Escape. It's getting very close. If you download The Great Escape app, which I have done, because I'm very organized. I have The Great Escape app on my phone. I can confirm if you go in there. First of all, the 500 plus bands that have been confirmed to play, they're all in there. You can browse them. You can decide who you're going to see, put together your personal schedule. But as well as all the bands, the conference schedule is in there as well. So that includes all of the partner panels and parties and networking sessions being presented by industry partners like Centric Music and Fuga. And I've now realized I've started listing partners, and the partners I forget to mention are going to get pissed off. I'm sorry to the partners I forget to mention. PRS PPL, PRS Foundation, they have their own little house going on the Friday. But in addition to all of the partner panels, there is the stuff that we at CMU present. There's our music and education strand on the Wednesday, our music and data strand on the Thursday, our music and video strand on the Friday. Plus there's the TGE Elevate strand, also curated by CMU as part of the Elevate Professional Development Programme for those early on in their music business careers. All of this stuff is happening at The Great Escape next month. Most of that we have already told you about. Maybe here on Setlist, more likely in the CMU Daily or on the Great Escape website. But in addition to all that, there are our keynote in conversations. We will be talking to Tom Gray of the Broken Record Campaign and many other things, and Kevin Brennan, MP, on the Thursday, all about the economics of streaming debate. But you already knew that because you've been paying attention. Mm-hmm. We have music PR legend Barbara Sharon. She's got a memoir coming out this summer, and she's going to be talking all about that and her long career in music PR, initially at Warner Music and then through her own agency, working with everybody who's anybody really in music. But you already knew that because we'd already announced that. So yeah, the keynote in conversation, which we haven't yet announced, is, well, we are going to be putting the spotlight on that big old Ed Sheeran Shape of You legal battle that took place in the High Court in London a month ago now, quite recently.
Which
we talked about in detail here on Setlist. We had a whole edition focused on it. And of course, it was one of those cases where one artist accuses another artist of ripping off their music, of infringing their music. And there have been so many cases of that kind in the US courts. People who listen to Setlist, you know this because we talk about it so much on this podcast. And we did think, well, maybe we can get CMU's Chris Cook to talk about how those cases work and the copyright law and the stuff like that. But then we thought, well, no. Actually, who understands the whole Ed Sheeran case best and the copyright arguments and the legalities and all of the stuff that happened in court best? Well, the team that advised Ed Sheeran on that case. So we are basically having the legal team that represented Ed Sheeran and his collaborators in the Shape of You litigation. So that includes Brian Craig's Simon Goodbody And Rayan Fakhouri from Blackstone Chambers and music publishing consultant Jim Doyle, all of whom advised and worked with Ed Sheeran on that case. So we're going to get their take on the dispute itself, but also the legal questions and the copyright questions that the debate raised here in the UK, and how it is linked to the various disputes that we've seen in the US involving, well, what, Stairway to Heaven case, and the Katy Perry Dark Horse case, and of course the old Blurred Lines case. So that is a very timely, I think, a newsworthy keynote in conversation that will be happening on the Thursday lunchtime of The Great Escape, which we will be properly announcing in the CMU Daily a couple of hours after this podcast goes out. So all of that is happening next month. Hope to see you there. Get yourself a delegate pass if you haven't already got one. But I'm sure Andy would like me to tell you that none of this is what we're here to talk about this week.
No, later on, we will be discussing Tiger's entry into the torrid world of sports shoe litigation. But first, Deezer is going public with a valuation of more than 1 billion euros. French special purpose acquisition company I2PO confirmed last week that it had agreed a deal to merge with Deezer, a move that will result in the streaming firm being publicly listed on the Euronext Paris Stock Exchange.
So it was reported earlier this month that a deal was being negotiated between Deezer, who we all know. Well, maybe we'll come back to how many people know Deezer. But I think everyone listening to Setlist will know Deezer. Maybe
they've
some of you.
Heard of Deezer.
Maybe some of you are listening to Setlist through Deezer. It's possible. It can be done.
Get
so,
it?
So I'm told.
I must have set that up. So yeah, sure.
I'm pretty sure there's a Deezer link on the Setlist webpage. But we all know what Deezer is. But let's talk a little bit about this special purpose acquisition company, or if you prefer, SPAC, or we sometimes call them blank check companies. It has to be said that given I'd never really heard of the term SPAC until about 2 years ago, they keep coming up in music business news at the moment for some reason.
Yeah. Well, it's how everyone's going public these days, isn't it? It's the fashionable thing.
Well, it is a sneaky way for a privately owned company to become a publicly owned company on a stock exchange. So basically what a SPAC is, a special purpose acquisition company, it is a business that doesn't do anything, has no operations, but nevertheless goes to a stock exchange. So in the case of I2PO, obviously it went to the Euronext Paris Stock Exchange. It did this last year. And they say to investors on the stock exchange, we don't do anything, but we're going to do something in the future. And we're going to do something by acquiring somebody else who's already doing something, if that makes sense. So this SPAC, I2PO, went to the French Stock Exchange last year and said, we are going to be a big deal in entertainment and leisure. We can't tell you any more than that. But hey, we know what we're doing. We've got some good backers. We're savvy people. Give us your money through an initial public offering on the French Stock Exchange. And once we've got your money in a bank account, we will then buy something. And so what this SPAC is buying is Deezer. So it means that Deezer becomes a publicly listed company on the French Stock Exchange. So the Middle Eastern streaming service Angami also became publicly listed this way. Elsewhere in the music industry, Reservoir Music, music rights company, became publicly listed through a deal of this kind. And so for the company that gets bought, it means they become a publicly listed company. And some companies want to be publicly listed. I mean, there are both pros and cons to being listed on a stock exchange. But unlike doing an IPO, where then there's all of the uncertainty about whether or not there will be a positive response to your company and what effect might it have on your corporate reputation if it turns out that investors aren't that keen and your share price isn't as good as you were hoping. Well, you circumvent all of that because the company is already listed on a stock exchange. You merge with that company, and in doing so, you become listed. So as I say, earlier in the month, we heard that this was likely to happen to Deezer. And then last week, a statement was issued which said that the two companies had entered into a definitive agreement for a business combination that will result in the combined entity to be named Deezer. So, you know, they decided that I2PO was not necessarily the best name for a streaming service. So the service will still be called Deezer. The company will become Deezer. And it will become, as we said, a publicly traded company on the professional segment of the regulated market of Euronext Paris.
Now, although Deezer was one of the first streaming services to launch, it is a relatively small one in today's music streaming market, but that didn't stop I2PO from bigging it up in its press release as the second largest independent music streaming platform in the world, because obviously most of the big streaming platforms in the world are owned by companies like Apple, Amazon and Google. So it's number two to Spotify, but Spotify is considerably larger than Deezer. The music consultancy Media estimated that Deezer has about 2% of the premium subscription market, while Spotify has 31%. So there is quite a jump between them, but that doesn't mean that what it said in that press release is not factually correct.
It is indeed the second biggest independently owned streaming service. It's just
with several others in between.
And the first biggest is more than 15 times the size. But nevertheless, factually correct.
Yes, but I2PO did confirm in its announcement that Deezer currently has 9.6 million paying subscribers, which is, you know, a lot less than Spotify's 180 million. But that's still 9.6 million people paying up every month, which is probably worth having.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we've now got confirmation of that. I mean, that was kind of what people in the industry were estimating as Deezer's subscriber base, because, you know, some information comes back from Deezer to its licensing partners in the music industry regarding its audience. And then, of course, we've got that Media research that gives you a number for the total number of premium subscribers in the world. According to its estimates, Media gathers lots of data from lots of places in order to come up with that estimate. And so then if you say, well, if Deezer's got about 2% of the market, obviously you can do some maths. So we kind of knew that it was something like 10 million paying subscribers. Although it has to be said, I mean, you mentioned that Deezer was one of the original streaming services. And I mean, both me and Andy have been doing this long enough that we remember there was a brief period when iTunes was booming, YouTube was starting to take off, MySpace was the social network that everyone was talking about. I think we were still in the MySpace era at this moment. And then both Spotify and Deezer arrived. And although here in the UK, Spotify got the edge on Deezer in terms of getting buzz around it, certainly within the industry, and there was a while where it was like, okay, we know what Spotify is. Oh, but there's this service in France that has a partnership with Orange, the phone company, who actually own a chunk of it. And in France, Deezer's the big streaming player. And then there was a period, once Deezer had properly launched itself here, that Deezer and Spotify were kind of neck and neck, and they were both putting out regular updates about how many people they were signing up. So we've got 100,000 subscribers. That's very exciting. We've got 500,000. We've got 1 million. And there was a period when actually Deezer was innovating around content at a time when Spotify's focus really was the app and getting the app better, and obviously then when mobile came along, shifting the app onto the mobile devices. But it was Deezer who initially made a big deal about playlists, about having its own playlist team, in a period when Spotify didn't do any playlisting. It was relying on the industry and media to do its playlisting. So Deezer was like, okay, while Spotify's nerdily making sure that its app is super rigorous, we are going to focus on having playlists and having local curators and being all about curation. And actually, it was Deezer that embraced the whole podcast thing before Spotify. They were like, okay, we're going to pull podcasts in. The podcast will sit alongside the music. But there was a moment in the early 2010s when just Spotify just started to explode, certainly here in the UK and in Northern Europe, and then ultimately across the world. And Spotify just grew. Meanwhile, Deezer, I mean, okay, had a decent subscriber base, but I mean, not in the context of what Spotify was achieving. And it was during that period that then Deezer got quite quiet about how many users.
Having been very noisy, there was a time, remember, when Deezer used to be, I mean, certainly for us, it became the company that put out increasingly outlandish press statements, like the time it said it was going to launch in more countries than exist in the world.
Well, that was, I guess, in the mid-2010s, once Spotify was completely, you know, outperforming it in terms of user growth. So they started to use how many tracks they had as a stat brag because they'd managed to get more tracks than Spotify. Yeah, and then, I mean, Deezer did go through aggressive global expansion significantly quicker than Spotify. It took Spotify quite a long time to catch up. So Deezer, yes, for a brief period, Deezer's big brag was, oh, well, we're in more countries. We're in 100 countries, 120 countries. And yeah, there was that one press release where I don't know where they got the number from, but it was technically more countries than exist in the world. But anyway, my point is two things. First of all, that Deezer became a much, much smaller player in streaming. Obviously, has always been a big deal in its home country of France. And there are some markets like Brazil, where because Deezer got there early and did some good mobile phone partnerships, actually, it's a bigger deal in Brazil. But in most of the world, it is very much a smaller streaming service. But my other important point is that once a streaming service directly lists on a stock exchange, so not if it's part of Apple or Amazon or Google, because in the context of those businesses, the music streaming is a really small part of the company. But if you've got a company like Spotify or Deezer listed on a stock exchange, it means that four times a year, they are now obliged to tell their investors how many subscribers they've got. And so by doing this deal, which will take them public, we have an, you know, pretty accurate figure of how many paying subscribers Deezer currently have. And assuming all of this goes through and it doesn't fall through at the last minute, once Deezer is properly listed on that stock exchange four times a year, just like we do with Spotify, we'll be getting pretty transparent reports on user numbers. And well, that will be interesting to see. Are these investors involved in this SPAC right to make this gamble on what is a very small streaming service? Is there a big opportunity there? Or is the ongoing story with Deezer, now they're going to have to do these quarterly reports to their investors, 10 million people, that's a lot of people, but not in the context of music streaming.
Yeah, and maybe there will be, you know, obviously the scrutiny of those numbers, and lots of people saying, well, you've got far, far fewer subscribers than Spotify, but there is still optimism about the future growth of the digital music market and, you know, how that market might diversify as it grows, and that, you know, the possible opportunities for platforms, smaller platforms like Deezer, beyond just trying to sign up more and more people to a 10 euro a month subscription. So in its announcement, I2PO did note Deezer's recent dabblings in B2B stuff, so powering music services for other media and digital companies, in particular highlighting its partnership with the broadcaster RTL.
Yeah, so it could be that Deezer is never going to be anywhere near as big as Spotify when it comes to, you know, what has become the classic music streaming product, the 10 euro, $10, £10 a month for 80 million tracks on demand. But I mean, the digital music market is already diversifying, and obviously a lot of the diversification in recent years has been around the user-generated content platforms, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, etc. But we are anticipating more diversification in the next few years, and it might be that live streaming, I mean, Deezer has invested in some live streaming startups. It may be that live streaming has a solid, lucrative future beyond the COVID pandemic. There's various direct-to-fan opportunities, potentially, you know, putting artist subscriptions, premium content on the platform. There may even be some stuff around, you know, NFTs and metaverse. So it might be that the people behind this SPAC who are now spending all this money on Deezer might be thinking, yeah, we're not going to compete with Spotify when it comes to what has been the classic streaming product, but over the next 10 years, all these new opportunities are going to come along. Some of them are going to go big time. And by having a pre-existing platform with all the licensing deals in place and, you know, 10 million plus users all over the world, we will be well positioned to capitalize on those opportunities, particularly if we've got some money in the bank. So that might be what the SPAC investors are thinking.
Yeah, and there definitely will be money in the bank to help further grow the company in the years ahead, thanks to, well, the funds already held by I2PO and monies raised via a round of private investment in public equity, which involved amongst others. Many of Deezer's current shareholders, like Orange, you mentioned, and Universal Music and Warner Music, and Deezer's current biggest shareholder, which is Warner Music's parent company, Access Industries, and some new investment from backers from within the investment community.
Yeah, and I guess that latter fact suggests that there is optimism, not just within the current shareholders and within the management team of this SPAC, but there is optimism in the wider investment communities. I mean, we know that there remains optimism about the wider digital music market and music rights market. We see that with all the deals that have been done in recent times. But it does suggest that there is enough people in the investment community specifically optimistic about Deezer's role in all of that, and maybe a little bit more optimism than there was 7 years ago. Because if all of this is sounding a little bit familiar, this isn't Deezer's first attempt at becoming a publicly listed company. They were going to go the traditional IPO route, initial public offering on the same stock exchange, the Paris Stock Exchange in France, back in 2015. And they announced it a little bit out of the blue. I mean, there'd been speculation for some time that it was going to happen, just like there was, you know, years of speculation about Spotify listing. And then they suddenly announced, yeah, we're going to list on the French Stock Exchange. And then kind of at the last minute, they were like, actually, no, we're not. And they called it off, citing concerns about market conditions, which cynics translated into, yeah, there's not as much optimism in investment circles as perhaps you were hoping. But I think even though they've gone this different route, so you don't quite have the risk of it turning out that there isn't as much optimism out there as you would think. But as I say, I think because optimism about digital music in general is still there, because we're starting to see diversification in the market, which possibly gives an opportunity for a company like Deezer, which it didn't necessarily have a few years ago, where it was all about subscription, subscription, Spotify, Spotify, then maybe, as we say, that optimism is justified. It certainly seems to be there. Or maybe, as you alluded to with your cynical hat on, it could all as yet go horribly wrong. Let's hope not.
Certainly, I2PO's CEO, Iris Knobloch, was optimistic in announcing this deal. She said, with its well-established brand, first-class management team and scalable platform, Deezer is poised to continue to capture a significant share in the booming music streaming growth. This is a perfect match and a transformational deal that will deliver long-term value creation for our shareholders, as Deezer is a unique asset with considerable strategic avenues for growth. With Deezer's hybrid B2B / B2C strategy to enter key international markets, its highly competitive technology and focus on environmental, social and governance, she went on, we are confident that the company is well positioned to disrupt and consolidate while providing a high quality music streaming service to millions of users around the world.
So Iris, for one, is optimistic. I mean, she has to be, really, doesn't she? But I'm sure she knows what she's talking about. And despite a little bit of cynicism along the way, it's all going to be fine.
And finally, on this edition of Setlist, Tiger has joined the exclusive club of rappers who have collaborated with Mischief on trainers that have resulted in legal action. As you may remember from, was it about this time last year? The previous occupant of that club was Lil Nas X, and Lil Nas X alone. And I mean, you might have thought that Lil Nas X was going to be alone in that club for a while, perhaps forever. But no, Tiger has joined him, this time working on a collaboration that has resulted in the legal ire of Vans.
Yes, so this is the latest quirky, contentious, slightly pretentious project from this company / collective called Mischief that we here at CMU first became aware of, really, because of the Lil Nas X Satan Shoes project last year. So Mischief and Tiger have put out these limited edition sneakers, or trainers, depending on which you prefer, under the brand Wavy Baby. And so they are designed to appear like they are digitally warped. Well, actually, you wrote this story. I assume you saw pictures when you were writing the story. I didn't have time to look.
Oh, I've been looking at pictures. I really like these shoes. I would have bought them if I'd seen them. They are very cool. Yeah, they look like that kind of wobbly effect you used to get on TV in the 90s. They do also look, well, a lot of their branding is quite similar to Vans branding. I imagine intentionally. What's one thing that's interesting is that this isn't one of, like, what Mischief do regular drops of stuff, you know, they put out a thing, a limited edition thing you can buy or something you can take part in, and they just do that, and they've got their website is just a list of all the things they've ever done. But these trainers are not on that list of drops. These trainers are on a new website called Mischief Sneakers, which does list the Satan shoes and the Jesus shoes as well. These were sold through a separate website. So it looks like they're going to do more of these sneaker projects, perhaps with other rappers, perhaps with other lawsuits. But yeah, we've got enough to be going on with for now.
So yeah, that's interesting. For a company slash collective who have been quite eclectic in the projects that they've done in the past, they are really running with this idea of doing quirky sneakers slash trainers. And yeah, is the legal dimension pissing off a big brand who's likely to send in the lawyers? Is that a key part of these projects? Well, part of you thinks that it probably is. And certainly, the day that these trainers went on sale on this new website, we should say they've all been sold. So if Andy got you excited
sold out in 10 minutes.
You can't have them. They've all been sold, limited edition. But the same day they went on sale, Mischief also filed legal papers because prior to the sneakers going on sale, Vans went to court to try and get a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction against the Wavy Baby shoes because they reckon this latest venture from Mischief infringes its trademarks. In fact, in its legal filing, so this was the week before last when Vans filed its legal papers and then Mischief responded last week. And in its legal filing, Vans said that the new shoes blatantly and unmistakably incorporate Vans' iconic trademarks and that Mischief has shamelessly marketed the Wavy Baby shoe in a direct effort to confuse consumers.
Now, whether or not they were, you know, trying to confuse consumers, trying to make consumers think that Vans were in some way involved in this, I guess that's a matter for the courts, isn't it? But Mischief countered in its response, saying that this is all a free speech issue. It was making a comment on the sports shoe industry, and it was well within its rights to do exactly what it's done. In its filing, it noted its own description of the shoes, saying, "By smashing the digital and the physical together in an object, Wavy Baby inverts that retreat, translating virtual shoes back into physical goods, leaving behind a bizarre remnant that questions whether we can re-emerge from our digital lives on social media, for example, where images and videos of Vans abound, without also being fundamentally warped." So, it's quite a thing to put in a legal statement. It said that its shoe is an exaggerated shoe, and that its warped shape is unique in appearance and not practical for everyday wear. It said that the distinctive wavy shape of its sole would make it unlikely that anyone would confuse its design with that of a Vans shoe. In fact, as I said, it said that this is some comment on the sports shoe industry. In the actual blurb on that Mischief Sneakers website, it says various things about the shoe, but it says there, "Sneaker companies are in a constant cycle of riffing on each other, and usually the innovations in form are boring. Standard shoe practice is steal a shoe, steal an upper, change a symbol. What a boring use of cultural material. Wavy Baby is a complete distortion of an entire object that is itself a symbol." So, yeah, more bold statements, and one that, well, it makes Vans' legal action seem a little ironic. It also sort of makes you feel like they were hoping that Vans would sue them.
Yeah, it sort of feels like Mischief are saying Vans just don't understand the creativity, the art, the message in this project, except that we need Vans to go legal in order to achieve the creative objectives of this project. So, yeah, it's all a bit weird, isn't it? I mean, for certain, when the legal action was filed in relation to the Lil Nas X Satan shoes, in that case, it was Nike who went legal, because actually the Satan shoes were actually Nike shoes.
Yes.
So Mischief had bought a load of shoes and then fiddled with them.
Yeah.
So put red dye into the bit of the sole where there's normally air, and they claimed a drop of human blood, because this was all linked to Lil Nas X's video for Montero, which was the suitably controversial devil video that you may remember. So it was all tied in to that. And Nike said, by taking our shoes and messing around with them, you're confusing people, you're implying that these are Nike products when they're not. And given the backlash to the Lil Nas X video, Nike, I think, were concerned that parts of the American population would be thinking that they were Satan worshippers. They also said that by sort of messing around with the shoes, they wouldn't function as proper shoes. People shouldn't wear them. So, yeah, so it was Nike that went legal in response to the Satan shoes. But, of course, in doing so, they turned what would otherwise have been a 24-hour Lil Nas X posting some quirky photos of some controversial shoes on social media into something that ran for weeks and weeks and actually became the entire concept for the music video and marketing of his next single release, which they achieved so fast that there's still part of me thinks that Nike was in on that. Because the entire music video and campaign for Industry Baby wouldn't have worked had Nike not gone legal. But I guess the point is that this is one of those classic cases where the legal action gets the brand and the rapper they're working with so much more press, so much more coverage. And given that for the rapper, it's all about, you know, building profile and getting people to stream music, well, it's kind of all part of the plan, you would think.
Yeah, and ultimately, I mean, Mischief and Lil Nas X didn't really lose anything, but Lil Nas X wasn't actually part of the litigation. So despite all his talk on social media and in videos about him being put on trial, he was never actually the focus of any legal action. And obviously Mischief got a lot of promotion for their brand, and after about a month reached a settlement with Nike where all they really had to do was recall the shoes. They'd obviously sent them all out, and they'd previously done a project with Jesus shoes, doing the same kind of thing with a load of Nike trainers. And they just agreed to email everyone who'd bought them and say, well, can we have those back? We'll give you a refund. And presumably most people didn't do that.
Not least because all of this litigation meant that the shoes had presumably increased in value substantially.
Well, yes.
From what they'd paid for and would get back by returning the shoes. So we never found out how many shoes were returned. We suspect zero. But Nike seemed to be happy with that. So remains to be seen if Vans likewise get a seemingly useless commitment from Mischief in order to settle this little dispute.
Yeah, and then it just remains to be seen, which shoe brand is Mischief going to take on next? I think the obvious one is perhaps the most difficult one, because Adidas have already done a stupid collaboration with a rapper. Because last year they collaborated with Tommy Cash on a pair of trainers, which of it, like it was the Adidas Superstar design. But the selling point was that they were the longest shoes in the world. They'd been extended to have 40 rows of eyelets added to them. They're about, I would say, looking at the picture, 2.5, 3 feet long, the shoes. I mean, if you want to talk about impractical shoes, they really nailed it with those ones.
Yeah, so to get any anger from Adidas, probably would have to, yeah, doing something stupid isn't going to work, but maybe there's something really controversial, more controversial. Is there a particularly controversial rapper that they could work with? I don't know. Yeah, we will. Well, now they've got a website specifically for this kind of projects, I guess we can just keep an eye on that.
Yes, let's go and do that now, because that is all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed this week, go to the show notes, which you'll find in your podcast player, or at setlistpodcast.com. There'll be links are plenty in there. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Rate and review it. Tell a friend about it. Tell two friends about it. Email us if you want to email us. We're at setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.